Hey, you're listening to Fanboys Strike Back, weekly review podcast, episode 9.
Podcast. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we are the Fanboys of Strike Back. Every week we read the comics that came out. We do a review on our site, fanboystrikeback.com, and then we come here and we talk about them. There are always going to be spoilers in this on these reviews, so if you don't want to know about what happened this week, pause the podcast and then come back later. This week was also Comic-Con, so we're going to talk a little bit about the big stuff that happened at Comic-Con, and then this week we're also going to give you our top five things we love about comics the most.
Yeah.
And so this is on to Eric, and Eric, you had the pick this week.
I did. This week, kind of surprising for me, I picked a book that I thought it was going to just be okay, and everyone knows I'm a big Batman fan, and with one good Batman book out there and one interesting Batman book out there, both by pretty high-name comic book writers, I was really turned off by both of them, and instead, I got a really good Batman-esque book in Amazing Spider-Man number 542. And this one, I've been following along for a while now. I'm new to the whole Marvel universe, but I jumped in at Civil War, and the Back in Black storyline has spun out of Civil War with Peter's revelation of who he is and how that's put his family in danger, especially Aunt May, who's been caught in the crossfire in an assassination attempt set up by the Kingpin to assassinate Peter. And so this story has seen Peter hunting down the assassin and trying to confront the Kingpin on his actions so far. And this book was amazing to me. There was something about the sheer anger that Straczynski conveyed in Peter at this moment, and you really feel like he is at the end of his rope. This might be something that happens every once in a while in Spider-Man that I'm just not used to, but I thought it was really well done because they took normally a fairly lighthearted character, and they really just pushed him to the edge as far as he can go. But they didn't push him so far that he's unrecognizable or he does things that seem out of character for him. This seemed like a natural progression to the point where we end up at this book. So, Straczynski, I thought he did a fantastic job. Garney on the pencils was great. Usually I'm half and half on his pencil jobs, because I do like detail in the work. But in this one, throughout the fight scene, we get a lot of just stark backgrounds in stark colors. And that worked okay, because in this, it really makes us focus on Peter and the Kingpin, and what's happening in the fight, and just the sheer brutality of it. There's a moment where Peter actually picks up Kingpin by his skin, and I was like, and just starts smacking
him. He does, he just smacks him around.
That was awesome, that was just great. You really get a sense of how lithe Peter is, and how quickly he can move. And so I thought the pencils worked really well in that aspect. And like I said before, it just leaves off to the point where Peter doesn't cross the line or anything, but he makes the threat of if anything happens to his family, that he is willing to cross that line, and he makes it known to everyone, which kind of ties up everything about the whole issue of Peter's identity is out there now, how is he going to keep his family safe? And this is the thing, going back to the Green Goblin and Gwen Stacy, the people around Peter have typically been the ones who have suffered when his identity comes out. And that was one thing I was really concerned about throughout Civil War. And so this kind of addresses that issue. He makes it really well known throughout the villain community that he's just not going to take it. And so I think he kind of puts fear into them to not go after anyone he cares about, which is another very Batman-esque thing to do. So I was just really surprised by this book. It was better than I thought it was going to be. I was really happy. I think there's one more issue left in the storyline, and it's been fantastic. I've really liked the whole arc so far.
Yeah, as a Spider-Man fan, I love this book. This book was shocking about how dark Peter has gotten. And yeah, it's one of those things where it does happen every couple of years or something. Someone attacks his family, and he gets dark, and he said he's going to kill them, but it's never really been done in this kind of depth. I mean, you can really see that he is at the end of his rope. And the stuff that he's saying to the Kingpin, it's Peter, and it feels like it is Peter, but it's a Peter that you've never seen before.
Yeah, it really felt like the stakes were high at the end of this, so.
Yeah, and then it's almost like you said, it's almost like reading a DC book, because it's written kind of like Batman, and honestly, the art and the fight was kind of like The Flash, but it was done in a really good way, because you see that, Peter is punching and kicking the Kingpin like 10 times before the Kingpin even can react to it. And that's something that he could, you know, do with his, all of his agility. It was great because the where the fight is it's in prison. Basically, he just beats Kingpin. Like, he just, you know, beats him and just, like you said, he slaps him. But the whole point about it is that there are prisoners all around. What he does is that he shames him. And that's the actual...
Yeah, he takes away what power the Kingpin had, you know, which is basically perception and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And without the respect or, you know, of fellow prisoners, the Kingpin really is powerless at this point. And then Peter actually addresses that. He's like, you know, you're just an ordinary guy. You don't have powers like this.
Right.
And it was good. It was really good.
Yeah, and I love the contrast between seeing Aunt May in the hospital at the very end and then seeing Kingpin on his, you know, prison cell on his bed. So
yeah.
Yeah, and then there's one more issue. And according to the cover, it looks like...
It doesn't look good for Aunt May.
It looks like May might die, so...
I think it'd be fantastic if they did that, but do you think it's going
to
happen?
At this point, I think they kind of have to.
They've kind of put themselves in the corner, though, because if she dies, Kingpin dies.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I'm excited. So, yeah, this is a great book.
Like, honestly, I kind of don't want... I think it'd be really cool if she did, just as a storyline focus, because I'd be really interested to see how they pull it off.
Uh-huh.
But if she dies, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner to where Peter would have to kill the Kingpin, and then at that point, he's crossed a line that I don't know how they would do that. And I don't think they can kill May and then have Peter not kill the Kingpin.
Right.
And make this issue seem as powerful as it is right now. Like, I think that would be doing a very big disservice to the storyline.
My thought is that because Peter puts it on Kingpin that if May dies, he's going to go after him. And then there's always been the constant problem that they've been talking about with their money issue and how they can't afford to have May in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if Kingpin's going to kind of step up and then maybe help May out just to save his own skin.
Hmm.
So that might be where it's going. But I don't know. But it was a great book.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great book. I think I was surprised, but the best book that I read this week was X-Men number 201.
See, I thought about picking this up, and I was so lost on 200 that I was just like, nope.
This book was actually really, really good. They focus on Cannonball and Iceman, who are two of my favorite X-Men, and it's the fallout of the last issue where Mystique shot Rogue, and not much happens. Basically, all you see is that there's an overall... plan that we're not sure what's going on. The whole story focuses on the White Queen who got knocked out in the fight, and she basically is reading the minds of Mystique and the Marauders and everyone, and she finds out that there's this grand idea that they're targeting certain mutants like Rogue and Cable, and the only X-Men really left standing is Cannonball. And so the White Queen basically takes control of his mind and forces him to leave. And it's a really cool scene because you can see him fighting against it. Like, he can't even control his body. He doesn't want to leave because Sam's, you know, the guy that's going to stick around to the end. But she kind of hijacks him. She makes him save Iceman. And then they kind of take off. And it was just really, really cool because I love the fact that... Because Mike Carey's run has been almost a year. And you've only seen him focus on, like, Rogue and the secondary characters like Omega Sentinel and Lady Mastermind. So it was great to see Bobby and Sam really, really get their role.
So wait, why did Mystique shoot Rogue again?
You're not sure. But you don't know anything about the plan. You just know that there's an overall plan and that the White Queen knows it. She told Sam, and it has something to do with them targeting certain mutants.
God, like, I hate this book.
Oh, I love it. I love
it. So confusing.
The one kind of surprising element to it was that Mystique used to have a lover named Destiny, and Destiny was a mutant who was blind who could see the future. Now, on the new X-Men Academy team right now, there's a young mutant called named Blindfold, who is blind and can see the future. In this book, issue 201, you see Blindfold kind of freak out, and it looks like she almost tries to kill herself by using another mutant's power against her. And so I'm not sure if she's going to have a link to Destiny or what's going on. For a while, yeah, this is confusing, but for a while, Destiny had written these books. Like, she just had written the future, basically. And for a while, the X-Men were searching for these books, and to me, it was one of the worst storylines ever. But now, it looks like someone else is trying to find the books, and I don't know, it was good. And also, they had part 5 of A Dangerous Species.
That's what I was curious about. I was going to ask you, how good, how is that story coming along so far?
You know, a lot of people don't like it. I'm not sure why, because I think it's really good. But, like I said over and over before, like, I love how they're focusing on the Beast. And basically, we find out who has been not following him, but who has been doing the same thing that he's doing, only in front of him. And it's actually the Dark Beast, the Dark Hank McCoy.
Who's the Dark Beast?
Yeah, in the back in the 90s, there was an Agent Apocalypse storyline where Apocalypse ruled the world. And you saw the counterparts of all these X-Men. And in this world, Hank McCoy was, like, experimenting on mutants, on humans. He would just do these just nasty... I don't know how to explain it. But he was, like, the most ruthless villain in that story. And when the Age of Apocalypse ended, certain characters came over to the mainline. And he was one of them. So now all you see is that he's part of it, too.
Okay, I'm lost. So... on to another book, Batman number 666.
I actually picked this up.
By Morrison and Kubert. This book was not what I was expecting. You know, I've been reading Morrison's run, and it's been okay. It hasn't really felt exactly like a true-to-character Batman book. I know that he kind of tried to do a 70s kind of globetrotting Batman story, and he introduced Damian Wayne, Batman's son, through Talia. The problem I have with that storyline is it just didn't feel complete. Like, at the end, it was kind of left off with, oh, Damian might have died. We don't know, and Bruce does absolutely nothing about it. It's like, if Bruce had a son, like, we all know how he feels about having family, because he just doesn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if he had a son, even if it was suspected that something happened to this kid, I have the feeling that Bruce would scour the ends of the earth to find out what happened.
Exactly, yeah.
So, anyways, I thought the characterization was a little stretched. I don't know, it didn't feel modern for some reason. This story, especially for the number 666, I imagine...
Well, that wasn't the whole thing that Morrison wanted to do, 666?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I think that was...
Sounds right up his alley. So we get introduced to a future Batman, which is Damian Wayne in the future. And this is a tougher Batman. Batman with his own rogues gallery and new costume, new way of doing things. And it's kind of interesting in a very crime-ridden Gotham City. Barbara Gordon is the commissioner. It's kind of Batman Beyond-esque,
mm-hmm.
but just very, very dark. And we see that this is a Batman who kills. He crosses the line whenever he can. And we see that that was a vow that he tried to make to Bruce, was that he would never kill, and he went back on that several times over. And it was kind of interesting. He fights the Antichrist, which is also dressed up as, like, Batman.
Right. That's kind of weird.
It was weird. And this does tie into a bit of what was happening in the storyline before this issue, which was all these different kind of Batman that Bruce was encountering that were evil. And, like, one was kind of a muscle-bound Bane-type Batman, one was a spiritual Batman. It was really, really strange. And at this point, I was just kind of lost, and I was turned off by the book, just on the sheer brutality of it and mischaracterization. It might not be a mischaracterization of all of Damian. I just don't like him as Batman. Like, I want a Batman who is dark, but someone who I can also root for, too. This was like reading a book, and I don't know who to root for. I don't know who to like. I didn't like anyone in this book, because they're all assholes. Like, it was horrible. And especially, like, when I had All-Star Batman the same week. This was a rough week.
This was a rough week to be a Batman fan.
Like, and I have to look at that other book. We'll talk about that later, but... Yeah, I have to look at that one as not continuity, as kind of a joke.
This is.
But this is continuity Batman, and I know this storyline is not continuity-wise, like the whole future Batman thing. That's just a jump for the number and a fun for it. But we also find out Damian sold his soul, so he's kind of immortal and he can't be killed. And it just didn't feel like Batman by the end of it. It felt like some kind of weird indie book anti-hero character from the 90s.
Yeah.
And I just didn't... It didn't sell me on it. It might have been good for some other people, but for me, I just was really turned off by this book, and I can't wait to go back to normal Batman.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about it was Kubert's art. Again, amazing.
Kubert's art, that's what made me pick this up, because Kubert used to... He's over at DC now. I hate it, but he used to do the X-Men, and I love his art. The thing I have to say about this is that this is exactly like Morrison's run The New X-Men, where he did a story, and then he just jumps into the future for, like, no reason, because he wants to do it,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, when he did New X-Men, he did this story, then all of a sudden he jumped into the future of, like, when the X-Men were going to die and die off, and there was these weird clones that were Nightcrawler and Beast and Cyclops. There was no reason for it at all. So I'm reading this, and I'm just like, why am I reading this? if this was like an Elseworlds tale or something,
that'd work better.
But it's like, this shouldn't be in the main Batman book.
No. And I think that's the thing with Morrison is, he wanted to write Batman because he got to do it in JLA. And let's face it, like, that's a character with a rich history. That's a big sandbox to play around in. And that's fine if you want to take liberties with it and do, you know, kind of off-the-wall stories that Morrison is known for, which he did in Arkham Asylum, which was really good. But you can't do that. Okay, you might be able to, apparently, but I just don't think it's right to do that on the main flagship title.
Right, it's kind of like a time and a place or something.
Yeah, do it in a mini-series, do it in, an off-trade or something like that, or in Elseworlds, but don't just screw with the main continuity of the main monthly book just for the sake of, oh, well, I want to. That's what bothers me.
Yeah, because this should have been like a miniseries. Like a miniseries exploring Batman's, you know, son or whatever. Because putting this in the main book, it's just like bringing up this kid, then all of a sudden never mentioning him again. There's no point in doing that.
Yeah. And we know that this kid isn't going to be remembered after Morrison's run is over. No, I seriously doubt anyone's going to mind that story for anything more. I can't wait till we get up to something better with that.
So you want to talk about your other favorite Batman book?
I do want to talk about this, and
we have not talked about an all-star Batman book.
Because I don't think one's coming out. One did come out while I think we've been doing this, but they're starting to come out back on the regular schedule.
Yeah.
And it should not be called Batman and Robin, the Boy Wonder. Because Robin is
not in it.
He is off being fed rats in the Batcave.
He is nowhere to be found. Polishing his axe, apparently.
For 4 issues. And we've got Black Canary back, which, did you notice, like, they tried to make her, like, really Irish?
I guess, but just, like, does she even have powers in this? Because she hasn't used them yet.
No, she's just, like, ass-kicking.
She's just, like, a Catwoman. So why didn't they just put Catwoman in it?
I don't know. That's the genius behind Frank Miller. He's like, I'm gonna mess with you.
This book is not good.
We have a very chipper Barbara Gordon, which seems to be straight out of The Dark Knight Strikes Again, at least costume-wise. We see Commissioner Gordon and his wife, which apparently she's a boozer at this point. And
they're both cheating on each other at this, like, same time,
yeah,
almost.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, how to root for this, because, like, Miller, again, like he did with Batman, but in Year One and in Dark Knight Returns, Commissioner Gordon was, like, one of the best characters in those books. And especially in Year One with him and his wife, they were a perfect couple at that point. And I know, like, later that you know, gets screwed up and he marries someone else and, you know, marriages fall apart and that's fine. But in this one, like, they just look like they're horrible together. And
what about All-Star Jimmy Olsen going to meet All-Star Vicki Vale?
I thought that was totally unnecessary.
For some unknown reason.
And then she just starts stripping in front of him.
Of course.
Vicki Vale is a hoe in this book. It is amazing. Like, and thank God Jim Lee's drawing it because it's good art. Like, I'm not gonna...
Jim Lee's art is amazing.
As a red-blooded male, I've got no qualms with Jim Lee drawing girls, but it seems out of place. And then you've got how many references to the goddamn Batman?
So everyone calls him that.
Yeah.
Not even him himself. Everyone calls him that.
And you know what? I'm starting to really love it.
Don't say that.
It is fantastic. Like, this book is just so far out there, it's weird. And Bruce even mentions it at one point. It's like, oh, we got all these newcomers. Come on. I even got myself a dumb boy sidekick. I don't know how that happened. You kidnapped him.
He's not even a sidekick because he's been in the cave eating rats.
And then Bruce is like, well, I don't know how that happened. It's like, he's just totally off his
marbles. But even when Gordon's talking about it on the phone, he's like, you know, so-and-so, the goddamn Batman kidnapped this kid, and I don't believe it. But he did.
Yeah. He did, and it doesn't make any sense, and, you know, whenever Bruce leaps into battle, he starts laughing. This is not the Joker. We do not need Bruce laughing every time. Like, I kind of understand what they're trying to pull off, but
okay, here's the best part. No. The very last page, you see Batman saving the Black Canary, jumping into action, and then you see Black Canary say, oh, sweet Jesus, it's the goddamn Batman.
That might be the best writing I have ever seen in my
life. I just can't help but think that Frank Miller is at his desk saying, people are going to buy this no matter what, so I'm just going to F with them.
I think he is. Like, I hope that's it, because otherwise he's just insane. And, like, I'd like to think that this is just a joke being played on all of us. And granted, it's not going to be what his work in the 80s was, and I've accepted that. And having accepted that, I'm having a lot of fun with this book now that it's coming out like this and it's somewhat regular. Now, okay, I'm not going to say regular, but it's coming out quicker than it has been. I'm really still curious to see more Vicki Vale and Dick Grayson. characters they introduced in the first issue that you thought might have an impact on the story, especially since one of them's in the title,
right,
and we haven't seen for a very long time. And I think it also hurts, too, that, like, you know, we don't see someone for four issues. Well, it's not like seeing them for a year.
Exactly, yeah.
This thing does not
matter. I mean, this is the sixth issue. This has been coming up for, like, a year and a half, I think.
Yeah, it was interesting. It made me laugh. Oh, it wasn't man. Batman. It was just odd. And I think that might be a reason why I had so much trouble with the regular Batman book, because I needed something. I needed something real, and Detective Comics and Robin didn't come out this month, so I had nothing. On to the next one.
I have to actually talk about Wolverine number 55, and we're going from a bad Batman book to a bad Wolverine book.
And this is by Jeff Loeb, right?
This is by Jeff Loeb, yeah. Loeb came back to Marvel, I guess, exactly one year ago, because it was last Comic-Con, and he announced that he was going to write Wolverine, and that he was finally going to reveal what the connection was between Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Yeah, and wasn't going to be their last big fight.
It was going to be their last big fight, the fight, and everything was going to be out there. Now, this has been going on for, like, six issues, I think. Six issues story arc. This was horrible.
Scott Summers looks pretty badass right there, though.
This was so bad. So, basically, what you find out is that certain mutants, Sabretooth, Wolverine, Wolfsbane, and stuff like a couple of other mutants like that, they evolved from some cat-like humanoids or something. It makes no sense. And so that's the connection between Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Is they both evolved from what?
They're a cat-like.
That makes no sense.
It was like a horrible barbarian cat-like tribe or something. There has to be one light one and one dark one. The Wolverine was the dark one that was good, I guess, and Sabretooth was the light. Because there's like, there has to be a dark one and a blonde one. And so Wolverine's
not dark and light is good and evil, but.
Right, but like.
On a superficial.
Like hair.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this was really, really bad. And, you know, Loeb has not been on his game for a while, especially with Batman and Superman. But, like, Fallen Sun is one of the best things I've read this year. So that's why I didn't understand about
all
this.
But that was a big controversy, too. Like, a lot of people didn't like that.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of people didn't like Fallen Sun. I don't get that. But this was not good, man. And I love Jeff Loeb, and so this is kind of rough. But basically how it ends is that there's a Muramasa blade that Wolverine had forged of, like, carbonadium. It negates his healing factor, and he had it made so that if he ever went too far, then he would have a weapon out there that someone could use to kill him. So he gives it to Scott Summers, and because he knows that Scott, and in this issue,
Scott has no problem putting Wolverine
down. In this issue, he keeps on calling Scott a douchebag.
That's kind of funny.
And I was like, that's great. Basically how it ends is that Wolverine gets that sword, he cuts off Sabretooth's arm, and he cuts off Sabretooth's head, and he kills Sabretooth.
So that's it? That's the end of Sabretooth?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a, I don't know, because right now Sabretooth is in Mike Carey's X-Men run.
So again, this makes no sense.
But, yeah, like, it's always been a great feud, Wolverine and Sabretooth. You know, when they did the Wolverine origin story, the first one, I thought it was good because they revealed certain things about him, but they didn't reveal everything, and I think they just should have left it there.
Well, he's always a character that needs some mystery behind
him. Exactly.
And I think they're going too far giving people, or giving the fanboys at least, what they were asking for is they wanted to know what was going on. And you're right, with the first origin story, there was still gray area. Mm-hmm. And I think they could have been fine with that. I'm briefly going to mention Countdown number 40.
How many more issues of this do I have to buy before I can drop it? Three?
Yeah, maybe. A couple more. I have stood by and defended this book for a good long while now.
Is this it? Are you, Eric, are you going to finally agree with me?
I'm not dropping it. But I am going to say that this book is not good. And I think it's not even the... I'm going to go out on a limb here, and it's not the writing. Maybe a little bit the writing. It's not even the art. The art is okay. I think the art is actually better than 52.
Uh-huh.
And just looking at the Jimmy Olsen thing again, I'm going to say it is the writing, because that was...
What's his name?
God, that was awful.
What's his name? Amazing Kid or
amazing
something?
Amazing Man.
Amazing Man.
Oh, or Action Man.
Action Man!
Was
so
that
good.
Necessary? Like, was anyone... Who wanted this? Like, what the hell? But I was happy to see Darkseid again.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
I really did like the moment, actually, where Jason and Donna and the new Adam were fighting the people in the Palmerverse. And then there was that moment where Jason kind of turns on the guy's like, my friends are good people. I'm not. You're going to give us this information. It's like, oh, okay, that's the Jason Todd I know and love. But on that fact, the problem with this book is the pacing. And where 52 shined was it had a lot of different stories going on. But sometimes you get one issue here or there where it was just one storyline or right. just two storylines. I don't need like 2 pages of each storyline in each book because at that point it's just too hard to flow together. Even if it comes out every week, it's just like I'm not getting enough of a storyline to get involved in the story
right.
with just little snippets here and there. There's parts of it that are interesting, sure, but I'm just not invested in any of it right now.
Yeah, it's just like I don't care. I somewhat care about the Donna Troy, Jason Todd storyline. I think that that's the biggest one so far. The Rogue storyline can be somewhat appealing. Like, I don't really need them to see them go and talk to the Penguin, but I thought, you know, Renee Montoya showing up at the end was kind of cool.
The hard part about that storyline, though, is I was all for it before Bart died, and it's really hard to care for these characters after they killed one of my favorite characters.
Exactly. No, you know? I hear you. But it's just like other things, like the Jimmy Olsen, I don't care. I want that to go away. Like, so bad.
They could get, where was Jimmy Olsen Must Die? That was one of the previews, and that can be fine. Like,
apparently
when's it going to happen?
Apparently it's still going to happen.
I'm waiting. Joker, come back. Finish it off.
Oh, this was just bad, though. This was not... Oh, this
I'm, in this one, I was so sick of Mary Marvel, just like, I'm dark, I'm angry.
Yeah.
I thought the dark side thing was cool, but other than that, no.
Yeah.
I don't know who the hell that was on Apocalypse that's sneaking through the sewer pipes.
Yeah, I didn't know. I was going to ask you that. Someone who's talking about how they know that Light Stray, Light Ray, whatever.
I'm guessing it's maybe one of the new gods, but I'm not really up to date on that. But I'm the only new gods that I really care for are Big Barda and Mr. Miracle, and it looks like they're going to be on the chopping block since they were in that preview. And... oh, well, I what can I do about it at this point? Countdown. Bad.
One last book that I want to talk about is The Mighty Avengers number 4. A lot of people don't like this book.
I'm one of them.
And I don't know why, because I think this book is freaking awesome. I love this book. And this, you didn't have a big, huge development. I mean, this has been, the only problem with this book is that it seems like it's coming out a lot slower than everything else, especially for Bendis, because Bendis is usually on top of that, so I'm not sure if it's Frank Cho, but Frank Cho's art is beautiful. I love his art. Like, he is, like, such a good, with superheroes. He's just a great superhero artist. And this is still coming out of the fallout of Ultron taking over the body of Tony Stark.
Or the armor, or is it the actual body?
Well, it's the actual body, because Tony Stark had his armor integrated into his body somewhat, so you find out that Ultron actually took over his body.
And Tony, yeah, backfired on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, apparently he's not the smartest man. And then you have some weird developments, like Ultron has taken over the body of Janet Pym.
The Wasp.
The Wasp. Well, she's just taken her image, which they haven't really confirmed why that is. Hank Pym created Ultron, so that has some kind of connection to it. And you finally saw Hank in this issue, and, you know, he's trying to help out, but Hank's kind of a jerk. So it's cool you get that banter between Janet and Hank, and that's always fun. The cool thing about this story, though, is at the very end, like, the Sentry is Marvel's Superman, and...
supposedly, that's what they say.
Exactly, and, you know, I have to give it to Bendis for really trying to make this character, like, what he's supposed to be. And you can tell that Bendis really, really loves the character, but the character really hasn't caught on. And the thing about the Sentry is that he's really emotionally unstable. Like, he's suffered from, like, severe depression and agoraphobia and stuff like that. And so, at the very end of this issue, Ultron kills his wife.
The Sentry's wife?
Yeah, the Sentry's wife. Basically, to take him out of the equation.
Okay.
So, Ultron's saying that this is a plan B. So, I'm not sure if Ultron is doing that to make him, like, go crazy and then shut down, or to make him go crazy and then just, like, lash out at everyone. So that's basically how it ended, and it was pretty brutal. Like, you just see him at the very end just holding his wife, and she's kind of, like, torn to shreds almost. So it was pretty cool. Plus, Ares is my new a new, like, cool favorite character.
He was cool. He was about the only character in that book I actually liked.
So, I don't know. I guess I can understand why people don't like it so much, but I think it's great. I think it's cool, and I love how it's the contrast to New Avengers. They're two totally different books, and
Here's my problem with the Sentry, is if you want to make him a top-tier character, or even second-level character, if you're trying to boost his status, and this is the problem Marvel made, do it in a mini, do it in a separate storyline, or, you know, do it wherever, and that's fine, just do it well, and it can succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But the second you say, he's our Superman,
you
killed it, because the Sentry, I'm sorry, he is not the same icon, he doesn't have the rich history.
You can't make a Superman.
No, you just can't go say, well, he's, you know, our Superman.
Right.
It's not going to work, because now you're going to have that comparison, and it fails at that point.
Exactly. No, so, you're right.
Real quickly, Teen Titans number 49. This is the last Amazon's Attack time.
Are you reading Amazon's Attacks? Anyone reading Amazon's Attacks?
No, I have not yet met one person. I have never even seen anyone pick up the book off the shelf while I'm in the store. And so this one, horrible mischaracterizations on the Amazon side, and like I don't even know why I'm defending this because I hate it. But okay, Supergirl and Wonder Girl. First off, they're just like back and forth. Like I don't know which side I'm on. Oh, I made a mistake. She was so angry and so upset last one. She went and took down the president's plane apparently, and then she's like, "Oh, whoops, I screwed up." Oh shit!
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And, you know, Artemides is this fierce warrior who would kill you as soon as look at you. And then all of a sudden at the end, she's like, I'm sorry. I see why you're doing what you're doing. And it's so, like, not Artemides. And I don't even care about her. But if you're going to do something, if you're going to characterize someone, stick with it. Like, this is just awful.
Well, then you had the stupid, the soldiers going at it. Like, where the woman was in charge and she was trying to help out the Titans. Then you had her second-in-command that was just like, no. There's, like, this power struggle between two of them that I did not care about at all.
It was so unnecessary to the story. And so, anyways, at the end, Wonder Girl comes back to the team. It looks like Supergirl's coming to the team.
But no, this,
Wonder Girl lays a kiss on Robin. Is like, was that necessary?
Yeah. And then you have Superman. Superman shows up to save the day. Then he flies back to help out in what's going on in Washington, D.C., which no one cares about, because I don't think anyone's reading that main Amazon Attacks book.
No, and you know what's so horrible is this is the Teen Titans book, and here comes Superman to come in, rescue all of them, and then leaves. And like, okay, we're back again.
That's what, like, the Teen Titans are. They're the weekend kids, you know?
Apparently, they're so the weekend kids. But yeah, it's like, Tim and Cassie still have a lot to talk about, and yet she just comes back, kisses him, and then, like, all the other Teen Titans are just sitting there smiling, like, oh, we're all back. And, okay, we've got a new creative team on the next issue. We've got a new team coming out. Blue Beetle's coming to the team. I'm excited. Let's just forget this arc ever happened. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I've lost a lot of faith in the Titans lately.
But we need to get that book back on track. So, anything else you want to bring up this week?
No, I think that's pretty much it for me.
Okay. So this week has been a big week due to Comic-Con. A lot of big news has been coming down the pipeline through us. You know, yep. Unfortunately, we could not be there. We're going to kind of filter out a few things that interested us and talk about that. First of all, the Dark Knight teaser trailer went online.
This was a big deal.
I watched this thing like 20 times back to back. I just kept refreshing that page, and I loved it. Basically, it's set up to where you don't see a whole lot. You see light kind of starting to come from behind the bat symbol, and then it shatters. And the whole time you're watching this, you're getting a dialogue between Bruce and Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about how Bruce has been trying to take down the mob, and they fought back, basically. And what appears to have happened is the mob, in their fear of Batman and then their desperate attempt to stay alive and stay in power, have recruited the Joker or done something to kind of put the Joker at odds with Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we know very little about the Joker. This is going to be a new take on the Joker, so I don't know if it's going to be as comical, but, you know, wherever the Joker goes, and this is movies, TV, comics, cartoons, wherever the Joker goes, bad shit follows. Like, death follows.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, it's scary. And then you get a little bit of the Joker, which is our first bit of Heath Ledger as the Joker, saying, tonight, people will die.
Yes.
I'm a man of my word. And with that, like, it was chilling. And at that point, the bat symbol just explodes.
Yeah, this was really, really good. I thought, hearing Heath Ledger I think that's good. I'm not sure. I think that maybe there was Two-Face in there, but I'm not sure. But the best part of it was Michael Caine is Alfred.
Yeah.
He is such a good Alfred, and I love how he's talking to Bruce, and he's like, you know, Bruce is, like, confused, and Alfred is just, like, letting him know, like, you know, this is what's going on, and I love that mentor being there for him.
Well, Bruce was like, you know, he's like, they crossed the line, he's like, but you crossed the line first.
Yes, and that, so that like, was oh, great.
That was good, and that's exactly what Alfred needs to be. I love these movies because they nail the characterization, and so that's why I'm really excited for The Joker, and I'm maybe even more excited about Harvey Dent. I think Harvey Dent is going to walk out of this movie. A lot of people are going to find out about Harvey Dent that they didn't know about before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think he's going to really be a force in this storyline. And I am so excited to see that.
Because normal people who know about Batman, they know about the Joker. I mean, all the casual Batman fan, mm-hmm. our casual movie fan, has seen with the Joker, or of Two-Face, with Tommy Lee Jones, which is not at all Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
So people who don't know about Harvey Dent, they're going to come out of this thing and be like, oh.
Yeah. Now, you might remember in the original 1989 Batman, Billy Dee Williams played Harvey Dent. And he actually did a pretty good job portraying the kind of person that Harvey is at first.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anyone who knows these stories knows that Harvey is going to take a tragic turn and something's going to happen to him. And if you know him from the cartoon, then that's great. That's a really good template for the character. But a lot of people, I think, on the majority, only know him from Batman Forever. And that is a horrible mischaracterization.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
So, I'm really excited about that. And this trailer, I think this was exactly what a teaser should be. They didn't give any visuals or much of the plot away, but it got you there enough to where you're excited for it and you want more.
And then they should release one image, which is on our site. Both the link to the trailer and the image is on our site, fanboystrikeback.com.
Right.
The image of the Joker holding up a knife to Rachel Dawes.
Yes. First of all, chilling. Second of all, makes me kind of scared for Rachel Dawes, because Joker doesn't mess around.
No.
And third, I was really curious, and I posted this on our site. The Joker, it looks like he's just wearing face makeup, like uh-huh. on his neck and everything like that. It's normal skin pigmentation. So I'm wondering, are they not going to do the Joker's normal origin of falling in the acid and having him disfigured, other than, you know, apparently the smile, but they might have a whole new Joker origin here, which I actually am kind of half and half about. This was a very big origin, and it's going to be hard to take a very iconic character and a very iconic origin like that and change it, but I'm sure it'll work out in the end.
I mean, Christopher Nolan, he knows what he's doing.
And the thing was, they were asked about that. Christopher Nolan was asked, are we going to get a Joker origin story here? And he said, no, the Joker is going to be the Joker from beginning to end. So this, you know, they might gloss over it, but it doesn't look like we're going to get, like, the Jack Napier falling in the acid type thing.
Which, I mean, I guess I can somewhat understand, because that's been done before, but they have to do something.
Yeah. I mean, I can see them really not wanting to retread over anything that happened in the 89 movie. Granted, these are totally different continuities.
Uh-huh.
But if they did that, they would draw a lot of fire on themselves to say one didn't live up to the other.
Right, and I think they're going to try as hard to make sure that they don't give any more reason to compare Ledger to Nicholson.
Because that's going to be really big shoes to fill.
The next thing that happened in Comic-Con that we were just talking about, Countdown, with issue number 26, they are officially going to change the name to Countdown to Final Crisis, so we officially know what it's counting down to now.
Which we all guessed. this really isn't news.
Is there really going to be a Final Crisis, though?
Maybe they're going to do away with the multiverse. I'd be so happy if they did.
But they can't. They just brought it back.
But it might be a year. They put Bart in the Flash costume for a year and then took him away.
But then what's the point? Because why bring the multiverse back if you... Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I know. I know there's going to be the new Challengers of the Unknown, which is going to be the Challengers of the Multiverse. So, I don't know.
They said that a main character will die. So, I have no idea who that could be.
Of who, though? Like, main who?
Well, I don't know. You can say main character, but that could be anyone.
That could be anyone, yeah.
I don't think they're going to kill off one of the big three.
No.
They might as well kill off Wonder Woman, because her book right now is just horrible.
She's responsible for that whole Amazon tech thing. That was horrible.
That debacle.
Yeah, so, kind of interesting. We all knew there was going to be another crisis. I'm kind of upset that we're getting another crisis so soon. I thought it was, you know, it's okay to do a crisis once every 10 or 20 years and reset the status quo at that point, but we have been bombarded over the past decade with so many of these that the word crisis used to mean a big thing.
Right.
Like, you got excited. You know, back in Superman, Batman, the early first arc, when Lex Luthor said,
"That's right.
There'll be a reckoning, there'll be a crisis." That was 2 years, 2 or 3 years before anything about crisis even started.
Uh-huh.
And yet that was
huge.
That was exciting. You're like, oh man, something big is coming, you know? Uh-huh. And now it's just like, another crisis.
Right.
And so I think they're just overshooting that whole event. But at the same time, I'll read it.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Infinite Crisis was good. I thought everything after that was not good. So
yeah, I love the build up to Infinite Crisis and the whole storyline itself, but then it just wrapped up everything kind of too nicely, I guess. Which so, I guess this is going to deal with a bit too.
I don't know. I mean, I can't say if I'm going to make it to issue 26 of Countdown. So I don't know.
I'm going to keep reading it because Challenges of the Unknown. We all know right now Kyle Rayner is Parallax. Well, apparently he's okay, because anyone reading their previews issues or reading Wizard has seen that Kyle is going to be part of the Challengers, and he's got his new costume again, so.
Was it the Iron one?
No, he's got kind of a new costume that's a blend of his first two and a blend of Hal Jordan's. Right. Like, color scheme, it's Hal Jordan's, but he's got his original mask. He's got kind of more of a badge on than a symbol.
Keep him as Parallax. I like him that way.
It's kind of cool. He made everything cooler. He took what Al did and he made it cooler. I like that.
Another big reveal about Heroes. Heroes premiered at Comic-Con last year, and so you knew that they were going to have a big presence at Comic-Con this year because they pretty much owe how the show caught on to the buzz that started at Comic-Con. You found out that there's going to be the spin-off Heroes Origins show, which is going to be six episodes, and then each episode they're going to introduce a new hero, and then apparently the fans are going to vote for the heroes at the end.
Who gets put into the main series.
Right, and the person's going to be put into the main series. And you found out that the director of the first episode is going to be Kevin Smith.
Which I'm totally okay with.
Yeah.
Like, and it's going to be kind of interesting, because Heroes doesn't really have very much of a comedy aspect.
No, definitely not.
And so, but
Kevin Smith can do anything.
And anyone who's read his comic book work, like Green Arrow and Daredevil, knows that he can handle a mix of seriousness in a storyline and pull it off really well, and then add just a little bit of comedy here and there just to kind of relieve the mood, you know, or the stress of the situation. So I think that's going to be really awesome. I'm really excited. You know, of course, last week on our top 5 TV shows, Dave and I both said this is one of our favorite TV shows.
Oh, yeah, so it's awesome.
I am really excited to see this.
And Kevin Smith, just like Bendis, I mean, he does excellent commentary. So
he does, yeah.
If you're talking about just having episodes, like, exploring a new hero and finding out stuff about him, I was like, yeah, that's cool with me.
Yeah, he writes dialogue well.
So, and then all the cast was there at Comic-Con. Peter was there, Nathan was there, the whole cast was there, so.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we're not sure who died, who didn't, who's going to stay.
I really don't know how Nathan could have survived. Like, I can see Peter surviving.
Because
he can regenerate.
I want Nathan to survive. Nathan was I think everyone wants everyone to survive. But
with Nathan's redemption at the end, like I was cheering on the couch watching.
I have to mention that too, because a lot of people were really disappointed with that because they're talking about how Peter could fly himself up. I think what a lot of people needed to remember is that first of all, Peter didn't have control of his powers, and second, throughout the whole first season, I don't think you ever saw Peter use more than one power at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's not like he could use Ted's power, which he had at that time, and then use Nathan's power to fly up at the same time.
Yeah.
So people have to realize that, because there was really, like, this big commotion about, well, that was stupid, that was just a cop-out.
Yeah, the thing about Peter is, even though he has a lot of power, he can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the whole aspect of his character. If you were watching that season, you know, he's got too much, and he doesn't know how to use it. So I think it was an unfair backlash against. But also, you were coming off the second to last episode where a lot
happened. That's true.
Like, that was an action-packed episode where there wasn't as much action maybe in the final episode.
Uh-huh.
So I can see people kind of coming off that other one being like, okay, well, that wasn't as big. But I think it worked how the characters were written throughout the series.
A couple more announcements from the Marvel side. They announced all the writers and the artists for Spider-Man One More Day. Basically, what's going on is that they're getting rid of Amazing Spider-Man, or Spectacular Spider-Man, and Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, and they're just going to have Amazing Spider-Man, and it's going to come out 3 times a month.
It's a lot. It's going to be a lot of money.
I'm not sure. Everyone's trying to say it's like the answer to 52.
I don't think it's quite that.
Right, but they're trying to throw out some kind of monthly book. I'm kind of weary about it because basically they're going to be having different storylines in.
So, yeah, but then how do you know which one to pick up? Like,
That's going to be the really...
And you can't have a different numbering scheme because it's going to be all the same book.
It's going to be all the same book. And so I'm not sure if they're going to try to do it weekly, but that's going to get confusing. So, I don't know. They have some good writers. Like, I think Dan Slott, who's doing Avengers Initiative, he's going to be writing it. Steve McNiven's going to be one of the artists. He did Civil War and Salvador LaRocca. So, but then the last one I want to talk about is that they announced he was going to be following up Astonishing X-Men, which is Warren Ellis.
Going back to that, Steve McNiven, who drew Civil War and was notorious for late projects.
That's
going
true. Well, I guess... No, he's a weekly book. Not even a monthly book, it's a weekly book.
I know, that's what I'm saying, is this could be disaster and of epic proportions.
I guess he got really sick, and that was what happened, but I don't know, that's not going to cut it with the weekly book.
Yeah.
Warren Ellis, and I think his name is Simone Bianchi. Something like the Bianchi. He's the one that was drawing Wolverine right now. So they're going to take over Astonishing X-Men, and that has to be the biggest shoes to fill right now. So, as a huge, huge Astonishing X-Men fan, I don't want anyone to be doing this book other than Whedon and Cassidy. I wish they would cancel the book after they're done. I really do. And that's nothing against Warren Ellis, because I think Warren Ellis is a great writer. But, like, this book has been so amazing that they should just cancel it. I think it's a bad idea, but I'm still going to buy it, and so I guess we'll just wait and see.
All right, so that wraps it up with all the comic book reviews and news this week. We're going to move into our top five now of the top five things that we like about comics. The medium, the industry, stuff like that. So I'll let David go first. What's your number five?
My number five is the layout of comics, and that is getting art and writing together. You know, it's so simple, but you don't see it anywhere else unless you're like looking at a children's book. Which
yeah.
I guess that's not a great comparison to what we're talking about right now. But
they take that medium and they... I'm apparently going to do my top five out of order because that was actually one of mine too. Is they blend the medium of books and visuals.
Okay.
And you can say the comparison would be children's books, but that's only on a very low level. But
exactly.
They take the depth of a adult novel or an adult-oriented TV show or movie or anything like that. And even if it's superheroes, they interject a lot of humanity into it. And there's a lot that can be said about books and good writing. But sometimes visuals are perfect for certain situations, for conveying emotions.
Right. Like, the artist is just as much a storyteller as the writer is. And there has to be that balance between the two. And I love the layouts of comics. Like, I love reading books and, you know, where you put the panels and the order and everything makes all the difference in the world. And I think it's like the funniest thing where you give a comic to a person who's never read comics before and they don't understand how to read them.
Yeah.
Because they're panels and the youngest, but it's the story. Like, that's how it flows.
Yeah.
And I think it's just beautiful.
I don't think you should give them like a Bendis book because those are kind of hard to read actually.
You should give them a Brad Meltzer JLA book.
Yeah.
50 different color.
That too. So sometimes I can understand it'd be confusing, but
yeah.
No, you're right. The layout, with how things are put, you're right. It seems like something so simple, but it works on such a great level of storytelling. That you really don't get in television or books alone.
Right.
This is something that's blended, and
yeah,
it's perfect. It's just perfect.
My number four was comics spinning off. I love comic cartoons.
Yeah.
I love it. The JLA Unlimited, beautiful. The old school Spider-Man and X-Men shows. Batman, the animated series, probably the best comic book cartoon adaptation. We're getting some great comic book movies right now, and we're getting some great comic book inspired shows such as Heroes. And so I love
even Lost is kind of comic book inspired.
That's true.
The story flows,
yeah, definitely,
and a lot of other TV shows too. Just because they're not superhero-y doesn't mean that's
mm-hmm.
not the type of story that you would normally see in a comic book.
So yeah, like basically that's going off of my number five. Like seeing the concept and the layout of comics, seeing it somewhere else, seeing it on the big screen. I loved, especially talking about, you know, in a little sense, is The Incredible Hulk by Ang Lee. You know, that wasn't the greatest movie, but they did some amazing things with special effects and panels in that movie, which was, like, I loved it, because it was like watching a comic book.
I'm going to mention Frank Miller's Sin City.
Oh, definitely. Oh, you got to mention
that. Was phenomenal. And even, like, Kill Bill was set up in a very comic book anime kind of type style, but Frank Miller's Sin City, that was like watching a comic book.
Definitely. That was the most stylized, you know, thing ever.
And 300.
Then, yeah, yeah. Zack Snyder's 300 definitely came off of that. And talk about Comic-Con news, which we forgot to mention, but Watchmen is go. They got the actors.
Yes.
And it's happening, which a lot of people thought it would never, ever happen.
I'm nervous. I am so nervous about this, because this could get screwed up so easily.
True. But, I mean, it's in good hands. Zack Snyder did an amazing job with 300. I mean, we're talking about two totally different concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess it's in the best hands that it could be.
I'm excited, but nervous at the same time. Another one. Quickly, I'm going to get off track here of a top five. They also announced the Teen Titans movie.
That's a bad idea.
And they said Nightwing is the only confirmed one. But I don't know how you can do it with the history of the character and how much he's tied in with Batman, because that's going to have to come up somewhere. But they say they want to do it in the same vein as Batman
Begins. Bad idea.
I know. This could be a train wreck. A very, very bad train wreck. So anyways, back to our top five. My number four, the fan community of comics.
Yep.
This is something, again, that you don't get in TV. You do get it in movies, in genres, like the Star Wars and fan community. And Lord of the Rings and stuff like that, is you just get a community so involved with characters, storylines, and stuff like that, that they kind of go a little overboard, but it's fun. It's all in the name of fun.
Right.
If you can look at it and just have a good time with it, that's fine. And like I said, with Star Wars and stuff like that, is you get a very story-specific fan community. Comics fan community is, you don't have to all be reading the same book, but go to a convention, you know. Usually it's just a bunch of people who are just happy to be there, to be recognized in this industry and be a part of it. Because really, comics really includes their audience in their product.
Right.
This isn't just something that's put out there for the audience. This is something that, you know, the conventions, the signings, the press releases, the podcasts, the companies do. It's all makes it feel all inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I think is very specific to comics, and I love that.
My number three is the fact that most comic books, anyway, never end. Comic books are ongoing stories. I've been reading Spider-Man stories for the past 15 years, and I will continue reading Spider-Man stories, you know, pretty much up until the day I die. This is the best thing in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. Your favorite TV show that never ends. Your favorite novel that never ends. That's what comic books are. And not only do you have, like, I mean, they've done it brilliantly, where you have a main, like, you have a flagship title. You have Amazing Spider-Man, that's Peter Parker as a grown-up. You have Ultimate Spider-Man, you have Peter Parker as a kid, you have miniseries. You have so many things to choose from. Can get confusing for some people, because there's a lot of different options, but just, you know, just choose one, and just keep on going. And I love the fact that, you know, Amazing Spider-Man is never going to end. Mm-hmm. And I'll never get tired of reading about Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's my next one kind of ties in with that as well, is the long-standing characters that you get out of comics. Characters like Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. These are characters that have been in continuous publication for over 60 years now.
Yeah.
Or some of, you know, Spider-Man's a little younger, but a lot of these characters, you know, that's a long time. That's not just to, you know, for a lot of people who dismiss comics, you know, this is not something to just dismiss. You know, these are characters, public characters. No, they're part of the literary canon. They're a part of Americana at this point. It's not just a silly comic book character.
Well, even worldwide now.
And I go back to the 80s when they killed Jason Todd. And this was one of the earlier news events where news outlets covered comics. And they didn't reveal it as Jason Todd dying. They said Robin's dying.
Right.
And at that point, Robin had been a character who had been in the public literary canon for 50 years. And people had grown up with that character. People were invested in that character. Even people who hadn't read that book in 30, 40 years
everyone.
They were missing it, and there was a backlash because people were upset that Robin was killed, and the writers of DC, you know, kind of woke up and realized that you can't just take these characters and do everything you want with them, anything you want with them,
uh-huh.
because these are characters that belong to the public.
Right, it's like one of those things where people always ask the question about how do you feel when writers kill someone. They always say, everyone's character is someone's favorite character. So you can never get off killing someone, because no matter who it is, it could be the D-list villain, but there are still, you know, probably thousands of people who that's their favorite villain.
Yeah. And odds are, you know, if there's one person who likes that character, you'll see him again. So, and another thing about being such long-standing characters, what is fantastic is, about in the 70s or so, up to now, characters started growing and maturing. And so, for us, and this is also happens in novels and stuff like that, and TV shows, but generally in TV show, once the kids grow up, the show's over.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but here, we both, you know, started reading comics when we were kids, and we've grown up with characters. Like, I've grown up with Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, and I've matured with them as they have matured as characters. And, you know, Peter Parker did the same thing.
Exactly. You know the characters. Like, you do. Like, you know, people, you think that it might be out of place for a fan to say that, you know, someone's acting out of character, but it's really not, because if you invested, you know, years of your life reading this book, then you really do know the character, and you do know how the character's going to react.
That's why there's such a backlash when there's mischaracterizations.
Exactly.
So
my number two is actually something you've already talked about, and that is the comic book community. The comic book community is unlike anything else. I mean, if you talk about Comic-Con's going on right now, and Comic-Con started off as a comic book convention, but, you know, now it's more about movies, TV, it's everything. And the reason why Hollywood is so involved is because of the fan base that they have there at Comic-Con. I mean, you have these people who, they're there to support something that they love. And Hollywood finally caught on and said, well, if we embrace, you know, these ideas too, and then if we show them that the respect of introducing it here for them, then we're going to get that payoff. And that's basically what Comic-Con's all about, because you have Comic-Con exclusive everything. I mean, they premiered the Iron Man trailer this week, and no one saw it, except for people there. They're not going to premiere it on TV or anything. And, you know, that's a lot of respect given to the fans. And last year for...
they did the huge premiere of Heroes that we're only going to get on the DVDs, you know, more than a year later.
And then,
so much for the fans there.
Right, and like Bryan Singer, I mean, he was doing Superman Returns. He took a jet straight from Australia, nonstop, to San Diego, and then left again that night because he wanted to be there for the fans of Comic-Con. So, you know, it's like it's the community.
And a lot of the creators are fans, too.
Exactly.
And that's what's nice about it.
It's cool. Like, you go up and you talk to someone like Bendis and stuff, and you're just like, you know, thank you for doing this, blah, blah, blah. And you can sit there and talk about comics with them. And I love how there's never going to be someone who feels exactly the way that you do about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone always feels different. And I love podcasts because you can get your voice out there and people are going to respond to it. You know, we get a lot of respect, a lot of love. And I just love the community. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. What's nice is, you know, you meet a lot of people who might have similar views as you do, but go on to another topic and they'll be completely opposite.
Oh, yeah.
So it's fantastic. My next thing is the sheer number of writers and artists who interpret characters. A lot of the times when you have a novel, with a few exclusions, I'm going to look at something like Harry Potter or the Anne Rice vampire books, is you have one author doing these characters who they've created, and granted, they should have total domain of them. But in comics, you have the very long-standing characters who you have just a huge myriad of artists and writers who put their own take and their own spin on the character. And this is both good and bad.
Right. It can get pretty choppy sometimes.
It can get bad. But that's just my opinion.
Uh-huh.
You know, for someone else, that might work totally perfect. And, you know, if you really want to go the next step, you know, a lot of people grow up to become writers themselves so they can do their definitive Spider-Man story or something like that. And so I think that is really interesting to watch, because one writer will come along on a series and I'll be like, that's the best thing ever, and the next one will be horrible, and then we're back again to a different writer, and I'm like, this is something totally different from what I liked before, but I love it.
Right, exactly.
So, I think that's something that you only get on comics.
Definitely, no, I definitely understand with that one. The number one reason why I love comics, and it's kind of the reason why I don't like comics, but it's a selfish reason, and that is the community is kind of a secret. Comic books kind of have a bad rap just because of how corny they were, like...
When they started, they were...
60 years ago.
Yeah, they were comic strips.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the way comics have evolved now is, like, the best thing in the world. And while I want to let everyone know, you know, how good comic books are, I kind of like knowing that I'm in on a secret that no one else knows about.
It's a very inclusive type of medium.
Yeah.
And that, to be fair, like, a lot of people do like that. I mean, you do feel like you're a part of a group, and as soon as you open up that group to everyone, it doesn't seem quite as special anymore.
No, it's, I want everyone to know, and I'll be the first one to try to get anyone to read comic books.
Yeah.
But, I guess I'm talking more about the hardcore, you know, the people who know these characters, the people who are going to be posting, the people who are going to be doing and listening to podcasts. I mean... That's kind of like, you know, the secret society almost. Like, it's people who know these characters.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it's like the old clubhouse when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know? You just get around all these people and just start talking about comic books. And, like, you know, like we were saying before, the best thing is that you may have similar views on one thing, but when you go over to something else, it's cut and dry.
Yeah. It can be totally different.
So I love that whole community and that whole, I don't know. I mean, they're with hardcore fans, it's a weird feeling. It's a very profound thing. Like, you know, like, I mean, you and I doing this podcast, it's one of the, like, we both enjoy it. We both look forward to it every week. And it's that kind of feeling, that kind of feeling of community.
Get my books now. It's like homework.
Yeah, it is kind of rough. Every Wednesday night, I'm just up to like midnight doing like, oh gosh, I want to go to bed.
I'm so happy when it's your pick of the week. No, that's not true. When something comes out that's really good, I do love to talk about it and write about it. My number one thing about the comics community, or comic business, is how it's just sheer fun. You can buy dark books, you can buy happy books, you can buy all different kinds of the indie books, you know, with personal relationships and everything like that. It's just fun. And there's kind of a nostalgic factor in it for me because I've been doing this for so long, and you read about characters you've been reading about forever. But, I mean, with all the cartoons and the movies and the franchises that are busting out of the comics right now, I think it's just such a great time to be a comic book fan right now.
Right.
To be reading indie books. The indie books are more in-depth than I think they've ever been.
And indie books are, like, I mean, they just, they're doing a Why the Last Man movie now, too.
I'm so happy about that. That book is just incredible.
And there's something for everyone, basically.
Yeah, there's something for everyone out there. And, you know, it's nothing to look down upon. It's just another medium for telling a story, and... It's just fun to read comics.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Those are the top five reasons why we love comics. So if you guys have your top five, if there's something that we missed, feel free to contact us. You can email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com, or you can visit our site, fanboystrikeback.com. You can comment on any of the articles there, and then there's a link to our forums. Feel free to go to the forum, sign up, and then post your own threads and reply to everything that we've put on there. You can also head over to our MySpace, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback, and then we have a ComicSpace, comicspace.com/fanboystrikeback. And yeah, any feedback, reviews, we would love some iTunes reviews, that would really help us out. Comments, questions, anything for us would be great.
Yeah, so that does it for us this week. I'm Eric.
And I'm David.
We'll see you next week.
All right, later, guys.